All right. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present, so I'll move for the approval of the minutes. Do I have somebody who's willing to move the previous meeting minutes?
I will.
All right. Representative Buck moves the approval of the meeting minutes for April 7th, 2026. Any discussion to the meeting minutes? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So first up for the calendar of the day on the agenda is Chair Howard with House File 3279. The plan is to lay this bill over. So Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, Chair Kozlowski.
All right, so moved. Chair Howard, would you describe your bill?
Members of the committee, this bill, House File 327, is the Our Future Starts With Home constitutional amendment. The grounding for this bill is the challenge that we've been talking about in this committee all session long and for years, which is that here in the state of Minnesota, we face a massive housing shortage, and with each passing year, it becomes harder and harder for Minnesota families to live the American dream, where they work hard, earn a good living, and have enough to afford their home, to rent or to own, to have enough to feel safe, stable, and to be able to live in the community where they want to thrive. The statistics that are not new for us, the 100,000 unit shortage, the fact that more than 650,000 Minnesotans are paying more for their housing than they can afford, and that in no Minnesota county can the most in-demand job afford the cost of renting or home ownership. Underlying this challenge, I'm going to borrow a phrase from Representative Nash. He's talked about the quadratic equation, about how challenging it is to address all of the functions that sort of feed into making sure that we have enough housing in the state of Minnesota. And that's true. We've talked a lot this session about how we need policy reform that unlocks more private investment and more ability to build the kinds of homes that Minnesota want. Another part of that equation is the need for dependable, sustained public investment, especially to address the housing needs that will not be met if not for that public investment. And that's where the Our Future Starts at Home constitutional amendment comes in, a plan to provide dedicated revenue for housing, to treat it like the statewide infrastructure, critical pillar of our state that it is, through a question to Minnesotans about raising the sales tax 3/8 of 1%, similar to the legacy amendment, which has been incredibly successful, so that we can set Minnesota on this course to solve our housing shortage and to make sure that in every county and every community, Minnesotans can afford a place called home. This resource would generate an estimated $400 million annually for 25 years. It's a truly transformational way to think about the way we would invest in housing. And why, I want to just acknowledge the why. Why go to a funding stream like this? And I would say, one, what we're doing hasn't worked. The Minnesota housing finance budget is 0.3% of our state general fund budget. And when you look at the scale of the importance of housing in the state of Minnesota, that is just nowhere near where we need to be. And I really liken housing to a type of infrastructure in the state, the way you might think about transportation, which is an area of our budget that does not rely so much on the general fund, but on dedicated revenue sources. We should treat housing similar, as a function so vital to our state's future and strength that we provide a dedicated source of revenue. When you start from a 0.3% part of our state budget, it is incredibly challenging to create the systems level change we need in our state. And so finding a new dedicated source like this and asking Minnesotans if they support it is critical to this function. So here's how this bill would work in practice. Similar to the legacy amendment, we would create a council that to distribute funds and largely bucket the money raised to address the major issues along our housing continuum. One, to address the direct housing assistance through housing vouchers to make sure that Minnesotans can stay safe and stable in their homes. Two, to build the rental and multifamily housing, affordable multifamily housing that we need. And two, to invest in building more affordable home ownership opportunities. So it focuses on ways to help people stay stable in their homes and also build the supply, and especially the kinds of homes that would not likely be built if not for public investment. You know, without a stable home, nothing in anyone's life is stable. And so what this transformational constitutional amendment would do would provide Minnesotans the opportunity to help set our own destiny and put us on a course to ensuring that everyone in the state of Minnesota can afford a place called home. And with that, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Great. Thank you, Chair Howard. And it looks like our first testifier, we'll have two of them presenting together, Nalima Sitati Muneni and Ben Halvik Anderson. So whenever you're ready, you can come on up and introduce yourselves and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Thank you, committee members. My name is Nalima Sitati Muneni. I'm the executive director of ACER, the African Career Education and Resources Inc., and I am also one of the co-chairs for the Opportunity First Starts at Home Coalition. We're a coalition of over 80 organizations across the state of Minnesota so far, who have come together to address the lack of a permanent source for housing in Minnesota. Now, we believe this is a very important issue in address, and this solution is important in addressing the long-term housing issue that we have been dealing with in Minnesota for such a long time. Now, over time, we all know what works, but we have not been funding the solutions that work. And when we do fund the solutions, they're either temporary, short-term, or we're not funding the right solutions at the required scale that is needed to either resolve the issue or even make a tangible difference. So what this bill does, it proposes four buckets of funding to be distributed across the housing board. 25% will be for household and community stability. There will be two brackets for rental opportunity. One is for rental assistance and 25% to be allocated to Bring It Home Minnesota, and 25% to create home ownership opportunities that are really needed. So what do these numbers look like? Over 25 years, we have the opportunity to provide at least 28,500 new rental units or at least preserve 200,000 existing rental units. Over 25 years, we could add an additional 25,000 new starter homes or finance 50,000 new home buyers. Now, this is important and has become abundantly important because the current average age of a first-time home buyer in Minnesota is 40 years of age. That means that we are locking out a lot of our young folks from the opportunity to afford a home. This constitutional amendment is one part of a larger housing vision that includes appropriations, bonding, and policy changes, as well as local investment, federal funding, and policy and private partnership. The current high housing costs, rent increases, poor quality rental housing, and lack of starter homes, all of these things are already imposing a housing tax on the people of Minnesota, and especially those who are hardest hit in our community. These folks include service workers, people who work in restaurants, retail, home health care, and more. What that would look like, for example, in my community is it will enable someone like Miss Mary in my community, who is retired and spent all her working years working in the local school district and serving our children, to be able to maintain her home, because right now she's at risk of losing her housing because she's retired and she's on a permanent income and the cost of housing just keeps increasing. We're urging you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. to our next testifier.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski and members of the committee. My name is Ben Helvick Anderson. I'm the Vice President of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative and fellow co-chair of the Our Future Starts at Home campaign. And Beacon is in full support of this, and I'm a co-chair, proud co-chair of this, because Beacon believes that the biggest thing our housing system needs in Minnesota is predictable, ongoing public investment. One example of why this is the case is the current unstable position of our effective homelessness response system is very much a result of our one-time funding approach. Nonprofits that care for our most vulnerable housing Minnesotans through shelters, transitional homes, and as Beacon does, supportive housing, hold it together through fragile, fragmented funding, often from one-time sources. When one funding source leaves, such as we've seen with the federal government's Continuum of Care program, we risk our whole homeless response system collapsing. But this does not have to be this way. Predictable revenue would be transformational. Here are some examples of what it could do. With Our Future Starts at Home, we could create, with the housing stability bucket, more than 4,400 new supportive housing units over the next 25 years, moving us a significant step closer to ending homelessness in our state while also stabilizing our existing supportive housing infrastructure. These investments mean children stay in school and succeed while parents find the stability to breathe, move forward, and leave the trauma of the streets behind. Also, with this amendment, Our Future Starts at Home through the rental assistance would create 8,300 new housing vouchers, stabilizing over 25,000 low-income families who are one check paycheck away from a crisis of losing their home. You all led, and we're so grateful to all of you in 2023 for passing the Bring It Home Minnesota voucher program that created around 5,000 vouchers in the world, where we know a housing voucher is so scarce. You could over double that new allocation of state vouchers with this constitutional amendment and dedicated revenue. Minnesota is a leader in housing, but the next transformational step is consistent ongoing resources, and that will only happen through dedicated revenue. Our future starts at home. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And next up we have Dakota Morgan. Whenever you're ready, you may begin your testimony.
Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dakota Morgan. I'm a policy fellow with Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and a youth leader within Ramsey County's Continuum of Care. I also bring a lived experience with me of homelessness after being in foster care. I'm here today in the support of Our Future Starts at Home Act, specifically the Household and Community Stability Fund. For the members of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, this amendment is critical because it addresses one of the most consistent drivers of homelessness across our state, the cost of housing. Right now, rent functions like a tax on the most vulnerable Minnesotans, ones that cannot afford to pay without support. And when they can't pay that cost, there is no margin for error. People fall behind, and too often they fall into homelessness. What makes this amendment different is that it's a long-term structural solution. It creates a dedicated, sustainable funding source that allows communities to not just respond to homelessness, but to prevent it. And this is not just a metro issue. The Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless represents a statewide network, and what we are seeing in greater Minnesota is urgent. Communities are facing severe housing shortages, rising rents, and limited infrastructure to respond when people lose housing. In many places, there are simply just no available units and very few resources to stabilize people. This is a solution that meets the scale of that challenge. It works for all of Minnesota, including the communities that are too often left out of funding conversations. Just as important is how these resources are governed. For a solution of this scale, it is essential that it remains grounded in community voice over time. That means ensuring people with lived experience of homelessness are not just included, but are meaningfully involved in decision-making councils. Because the reality is, people who have experienced homelessness understand exactly where systems fail. I know that firsthand. After aging out of foster care, I experienced homelessness at a point in my life where we already know people are at risk. The transition and the outcomes are predictable, and yet, without the right resources in place, there was nothing to stop the instability from becoming something worse. That is the gap this fund is designed to close. The Our Future Starts at Home Act is about making homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring by giving communities the tools to act early, to respond effectively, and to build systems that actually work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here and sharing your wisdom with us. We'll move to any public testimony. So, oh, my apologies. There's one more testifier. I see we have Chris Bergren. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Chris Bergren, and I live in Minneapolis. I volunteer as a housing advocate with my church, St. Joan of Arc Catholic Community, and I'm here to speak in favor of House File 3279. The federal government has abdicated its investment in affordable homes and critical support for people who are unhoused. Here in Minnesota, we don't abandon our neighbors. That is why we must create reliable, ongoing statewide revenue to help people get housed and stay housed. At St. Joan's, we are doing what we can, where we can. We have dedicated funds that we raise and distribute through an application process to help neighbors make their rent. So many people apply every month. Last year, we were able to help 90 people, averaging $1,645 per person. And we're not alone. Many congregations of all faiths offer shelter or financial help. But the faith community can't fix this alone. We need you who make these decisions for all Minnesotans to put our money where our values are. And I just want to briefly tell you about a guy named John about my age who I met a few years ago. He was born and raised in northern Minnesota and unfortunately had been homeless for decades. When he got into supportive housing in St. Paul, he finally could avoid his old drinking buddies and stay sober. He could organize medical appointments and take his meds on schedule. And he saw a future for himself again. After a few years in supportive housing, he moved into his own apartment. There are many more neighbors in all our communities like John. We need more supportive housing, and to do that, we need this dedicated statewide revenue system. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Now we will move to public testimony. Are there any members of the public here wishing to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. And it looks like we have Representative Johnson up first.
Thank you, Chair, co-chair. Thank you, Chair Howard, for bringing this forward. I have a few questions and I'll start off, but wasn't in 2023 there was sales tax increases on the seven county metro area that was also supposed to deal with housing, homeless, and stuff like that?
Chair Howard.
Chair Kozlowski, Representative Johnson, yes, we did pass a seven county metro-wide quarter cent sales tax, and that's making a big difference in a lot of ways. It is helping fund a big chunk of the 5,000 housing vouchers that were referenced. And the way that resource works is it goes to counties and cities with an ability to use that for a variety of uses. And so it's helping to both, it's a similar use to some of these practices, but that was confined just to the metro area. This would be statewide, which is one of the differences.
All right, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Wasn't it also at the end of session last year that there were some negotiations behind doors to take some of that money away and give it back to the Met Council?
Chair Howard.
Chair Kozlowski, Representative Johnson, I don't know what that's in reference to with the...
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I know it happened because we had counties down here screaming and we had testifiers coming in that money that was already spent, that there was a decision to take that sales tax away from the counties and give it back to Met Council. I believe it was a bill, and maybe it was on the tax, was Dapke was speaking about that, was pushing that bill.
Might have been the transportation bill, but back to Chair Howard.
Yeah, Chair Kozlowski, Representative Johnson. I believe that was in reference, it was a seven county metro tax, but I think that was in relation to maybe the transit, a tax related to transit and use of resources that did not have an impact on the metro-wide sales tax dedicated to housing.
Thank you. One more.
Representative Johnson.
So the concern I have in being also on taxes, sales taxes recognizes being one of the most regressive taxes out there, that it hurts the same people you're claiming to help. It was even came up when the governor tried to expand his and his sales tax and how who it would hurt. So wouldn't this basically go towards the and against the affordability of people, because we know who is going to get affected by the sales tax are the same people that it's claiming to help. So aren't you just hurting the same people?
Chair Howard.
Chair Kozlowski, Representative Johnson. I think it's a fair question, because I serve on taxes as well and care about regressive. But what I would say is that right now, probably the most regressive cost in our state right now, our housing costs, our lower income folks, because of the lack of supply and affordability of housing, are hurt the most by a system that is not generating the level of housing that we need. The sales tax, this level at 0.375%, you know, on $1,000 of taxable goods, it's about $3.75. But if we don't find a way to address our long-term need to build especially affordable homes, the sort of regressivity of our economics will only worsen. And so what I would say is, there are only a handful of dependable ways to do this, and the sales tax in a very modest way is a way to have that sort of dependable long-term source of revenue and address the major cost issue for, especially for lower-income folks, which is the cost of housing.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Representative Nash.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Well, Representative Howard, thanks for the quote on the quadratic equation, but I would argue that sometimes your integers are wrong, and it's wrong here. 0.375%. Remind us again, Chair Howard, what does that generally create revenue-wise as at your estimation?
Chair Howard.
Chair Kozlowski, roughly $400 million annually.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Kozlowski. So once again, I am all in favor of jump-starting housing. We all know that. We've been fighting it together for years. But this is not the battlefield that I'm ever going to step on, because we used to be the land of 10,000 lakes. Now we're the land of 10,000 taxes. And this is another tax that's being layered on top of another tax on top of another tax. And Representative Johnson alluded to some of it, but you have a delivery tax that got put in. You've got a transit tax. You have an existing housing tax. And there are all kinds of other taxes that have been layered on. We are the 44th least competitive state in the union from a tax perspective. This is now going to make us probably drop a couple more percentage points. And quite honestly, I'm not really all that enthused by being below Mississippi on tax competitiveness. The impediment is overregulation at the municipal level. And I think all of us agree on that. We are in lockstep on that. And I keep hoping that we're going to get that one done this year. But this is not the answer. And I'm glad that this is being laid over and it's not leaving, or I would probably vote no a couple of times, because when I talk to people in my district in Carver County, they are having a hard time with affordability. You just admitted that this is a regressive tax. You know, we've got people who are trying to put gas in their tank. They're trying to put food on their table. They are trying to buy a house themselves. They're scraping. And we've talked about the fact that my kids gave up on Minnesota. They don't want to come back to another tax. This is just way beyond the pale. And I think that when we look at it in aggregate, the solution is not just tax more people to buy when they buy more things. And the regressivity of this is, as Representative Johnson said, going to cut against the very people who are trying to help up. I would rather put all of our effort into changing the landscape here in Minnesota from a regulatory perspective. But this is way too far, and it is definitely a wrong integer. So when you run the calculated outcome for the quadratic equation, your answer is going to be wrong, because this is so such a bad idea. I just I can't support it. And even though we're not voting for it and it's being laid over, I would vote for it no about a half a dozen times. Thank you.
All right. Next up, we'll move to Representative, Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. First, I guess I regret using the quadratic equation example. What I would say, Chair Nash, is, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the overregulation and restrictive practices that cities have put in place are a huge barrier. But it is not true to say that if we passed our zoning reform efforts, that in itself is the solution, especially to build the kinds of homes, deeply affordable housing, to jumpstart production. We need to do both. We can't put all our eggs in one basket, and public investment is critical if we're going to ultimately get to a place where we address our housing shortage. And I do believe that when you look at the outcomes, to be able to produce tens of thousands of more units of homes, affordable homes to own, tens of thousands of more units of affordable rental units, you're going to start to see an impact on that key affordability issue that works in concert with the kinds of the reforms we need to face on the policy side. But if we're only going to look at one side of the coin in terms of policy and not on public investment, we're not going to I was almost going to go back to, I'm not the quadratic equation stuff, but you know, if we're not able to look at both sides of this coin, we're not going to be able to truly address this need in the long term.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Chair Kozlowski. Well, Representative Howard, you just admitted earlier that you already have a tranche of money that's been passed into existence by a metro sales tax for housing. But now you want to create more, saying that will be the solution, another tranche of money. Why would you not first work very hard, and I know you are, to get the regulatory piece fixed and then reassess from that? Just trying to pass another tax into existence it's so offensive to the people who I represent, and probably all of you represent too. If you were to take a poll and say, hey, how do you feel about yet another tax? You're going to get some words that probably start with the letter F. And I just can't imagine that this is a solution that a lot of people are going to get wholeheartedly behind, because they're the ones who are going to get hit with this. And again, I just had a town hall recently, and affordability was a huge topic of conversation. This is so far beyond the pale. So thank you, Chair.
Chair Howard.
Just quickly, I just make the note that, you know, this bill is a poll. It's a poll to ask Minnesotans to decide. And I think you might be surprised at the response of Minnesotans because of how critical affordability is and how vital housing is at the center of it. You know, I wouldn't be bringing this bill forward if I wasn't very confident of how Minnesotans would answer the question.
All right. Move to Co-Vice Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, Co-Chair Kozlowski. Chair Howard, I understand your heart behind this bill and what you're trying to do, but the question I've got is this tax, and I step in lockstep with the words that Representative Nash and Johnson have shared today and their concerns, but the question I've got is this tax, will this also apply to building material on the affordable housing?
Chair Howard.
Chair Kozlowski, it's a sales tax. I'd have to, you know, it's applied just generally to the sales tax. So I assume it would apply.
It would apply.
By Sir Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair. How does this make housing more affordable at this point when we're taxing on top of it? The question I've got next would be is your intent to eventually take this statewide and push this for a statewide tax on all items across the state of Minnesota?
Chair Howard.
So a couple things. How this helps bring down the cost of housing is the funds that are included in this bill would go to the production specifically of housing that's affordable for Minnesotans and their communities. So dollars would be spent from the money raised to build more units at a more affordable price. So you're going to have thousands of more Minnesotans be able to have more choice and more opportunity to find a home that's more affordable and to pay less in their out of their daily budget on housing. And a reminder, right now the numbers say that 650,000 Minnesotans right now are spending more than 30% of their whole income. This is their largest budget item, and every year that number grows. And so by investing public resources in the creation of affordable homes to rent, affordable homes to own, you're going to have more choice, more opportunity for people to pay quite a bit less for their housing. And your second question was, would be a statewide sales tax. So we would ask the whole state of Minnesota during the general election, you know, do you support a 3/8 of 1% sales tax increase statewide?
Vice Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, Vice Chair, our co-chair. Thank you for your clarification on that. I think Minnesotans have had enough of the tax, and they're just struggling just to get by right now. I'm just concerned about how much is enough as we move forward, but thank you.
All right, we'll move over to Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Howard. You know, we had a little bit of a debate initially when this went out on the floor, and you talked a little bit about polls, and we had a debate on the floor about allowing a poll for the housing tax last time, that you didn't give the seven county metro area that opportunity. What has changed now that now you want to do that?
Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. I would say one difference here is that this, the way that this proposal is set up is similar to the legacy amendment, where we're putting more control into the hands of Minnesotans and setting this into the state constitution. And the virtue of that is that it provides more sort of dependability long-term for this type of fund to last in perpetuity in a way that's built off of a similar structure of the legacy amendment, which has been successful. That just wasn't the structure we took with the Metroid sales tax.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. I think, you know, that answers my question. Is probably 2 years ago you felt like you didn't have the votes from the general public, so you got it passed on your own. What I'm really frustrated with is, you know, we saw, what we get? Tab increases, new sales tax increase on vehicles, gas increase, delivery tax. We had that metro-wide transportation. We got a new tax. We had a payroll tax increase. We're seeing property tax increases. You have boat fee increases, state park fee increases. What did we hear this week? Digital advertising tax increases, social media tax increases, another tiered income tax, and what I'll call the force out tax. That if you're in the tax committee, you heard that today by the tax, or this week from the tax chair. I hate to see these solutions are always around money. They're always around new taxes, more money. And I mean, we heard it today from a lot of other people. I mean, if we're not listening to our constituents about what things cost, and this is going to impact everything. I mean, somebody gets into a place, you know, if they have a car breakdown, they're going to have to pay, you know, tax on that. If they've got to get new appliances for the place, if they're going to have to fix sheetrock, if they're going to have to buy anything related to a home, they're going to pay more tax for that. If we're not looking at some of the easier fixes that I think are building codes, we just, again, I guess I'll go to the energy tax or the energy code that we just passed or we're looking to pass. It's going to add tens of thousands of dollars. There's much easier ways, I think, to make it more affordable and actually have a better balanced approach. So again, like, you know, don't always agree with Chair Nash on stuff, but you know, if this was a vote, I would be voting no 100 times.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if you're allowed to do that, Representative Myers. But just a couple of comments. One, I think all of our constituents are talking to us a lot about affordability. But what I tend to hear from my other side of the aisle is a really black and white diagnosis of that affordability issue just through the frame of taxes. Representative Nash made the comment earlier that he doesn't want us to fall below Mississippi. Well, I'll tell you what, right now we are a much better state in terms of our quality of life than the state of Mississippi. Minnesotans want to live in a place that has strong public schools, that has quality health care. And one of our supreme advantages right now in the state of Minnesota is that we are a relatively affordable state to live and to work. And that is falling away from us at every turn. And so that is what this bill seeks to solve in a permanent way, to help ensure that we continue to have that high quality of life that does make Minnesota a differentiator, that does make Minnesota a place where people want to live. And there are a number of ways, of course, to get at this. This is one of them. But based on Representative Meyer's comments, I'm sure he's going to co-sign on Co-Chair Igoe's Starter Home Act. So that's good, too.
All right. Representative Mamani Hiltzi.
Thank you so much, Chair Plonoski and Chair Howard, for bringing this bill up. I think we can all agree that we have a housing crisis, that's something that we all can agree on. And so for me, I would be voting 1,000% for this bill if we are talking about voting, because Minnesota's housing shortage requires more than just a one-time funding. And I think that in this committee, we've been, I would coin, just passing Band-Aid solutions to this crisis. And I think this bill right here, you know, especially with our Minnesota housing crisis, it requires a sustainable system-leveled response to this and not just a one-time or partial solution. So for me, this bill, when I go through it, it's important because it creates a dedicated funding structure that supports the and fully housing continuum. That's housing, home ownership, rental sustainability, homelessness prevention, you name it, right? So for me, this bill moves Minnesota forward, not backwards. It is predictable, accountable housing finance model that Minnesota needs to address this long-term solution that we need. So this is why we need this bill. And if we are serious about the long-term housing stability solution, this is a great start to the issue, addressing the issue. So, Chair Howard, I really appreciate the work that you have put into this bill, and I understand that this is not the first time this has come up. It has been in the works for years, and I think it's about time we do what's right for many Minnesotans who are desperately in need of us addressing this housing crisis. Thank you.
Next on the list is Representative Macklin.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Chair Howard, when did the 0.25% one go in, did you say?
Chair Howard.
Sorry.
The quarter percent.
Yes. When did that pass?
Yeah.
2023, the 2023 year. Yeah.
Representative Macklin.
Thank you, Chair. And you said it's done a lot of good.
Chair Howard.
It's starting to. The specific ways that it has already started to become incredibly impactful is a quarter of that quarter is dedicated to bring it home housing vouchers in the 7-county metro area, and we'll fund thousands of those. And so those are starting to hit people. Those are life-changing investments for folks that are help them able to afford homes. We've heard testimony from, you know, counties and cities are the main receivers of those funds. And so, especially in some of our larger metro counties, they're using those resources in a number of ways, emergency rental assistance, but also to help build and produce more homes. Obviously, the arc of production takes longer. So it's not like you can pass a sales tax increase and snap a finger and you're going to start to see thousands of new homes. But that's sort of the virtue of this proposal. It's about the future. It's about generational change, and it would provide 25 years of dependable funding to get the kind of long-term outcomes we see.
Representative Macklin.
Thank you, Chair. So in the last, 2 years, the first-time homebuyer age went up a couple of years, or last 1 year it went up 2 years, something like that. I don't think this is the smart way to go. You know, the lowest end cost of a house, the tax alone, the sales tax, would be roughly 10 grand. Just sell to them tax-free. Have the builder provide them out and take it off their mortgage or something before they get their mortgage. I mean, what Rep. Nash said, we've been talking about this for, like, whether it's in this committee or in labor, the regulatory in this state is absurd. It's 40, 50 grand cheaper in Fargo than it is in Minnesota. It's 130,000 cheaper in Indiana for the exact same house that Lennar builds here as they build there. We have a serious regulatory problem. Everybody is so strapped. $1 billion in new tax, property tax increases throughout the state. And it's all we're hearing about everywhere. Everything is too expensive. And then to tack this on, 25 years. How much more is a 2x4 going to cost 25 years from now? And what will that 0.375% mean then? Because every time the cost of something goes up, there's more pennies that are coming out of that everybody's pocket. But, I mean, even on the product, this thing will grow. It's going to be way more than $400 million then because the cost of goods are going to be up significantly. This is actually surprising to me that with all the new taxes that everybody's mentioned here, and there are certainly far more clever ways we could make housing more affordable. But we've all seen in this committee the pushback from local government. But yet they keep applying more and more things. I mean, it was the city of Corcoran, 5 years ago, that was tripling the cost of permit fees just so they could remodel their damn city hall. And I'm going to tell you something that I know many of you are proud of, but your general contractor liability, your, what's the other one? Misclassification, your wage theft law that you passed back in, 19 or 20, and now with the PFML and the SST, if you add all those together, and even more so just the last three, that in itself is a $77 increase on roofing. Because that's how much the shingle manufacturer to the wholesaler to the retailer has gone up. And then, of course, it gets marked up by the builder himself or the contractor. And you can't understand why we have a lack of affordable housing, but we have all these programs. Everybody wants them. I get it. And now we have issues with – I mean, there's so much that is driving up the cost. PFML is driving up the cost because – we are all adding people to cover more empty spots, not to mention the regulatory we got to do on paperwork. Because misclassification and general contractor liability is just a tremendous amount of paperwork. So that's a tremendous amount of admins. So an admin at 60 to 70 grand a year, if I have to have five new ones, I'm packing that into the cost of the house. Yet you just want to charge everybody more. So I agree with Rep. Myers. Is like, there are so many people moving out of the state, and I lost three plumbers in my district. They all went to South Dakota, and when is enough enough? I mean, eventually we're not going to have any trade people, but thank you, Madam Chair.
Next we'll move over to Representative Scraba.
Hey, sorry. Thanks. I didn't think there was this and them. I was going to go into it long like these guys, but I can't support this, just like I can't support a tax on clothing. I just can't do it. It's a regressive tax, and it hits the people, you know, like for me, who buys more clothes than a family? Rich people don't buy clothes. They don't do that. We buy only what we need. Families have to keep buying clothes, and then you tax them. Same thing with housing here. I mean, if you put a tax on everything, the people that have no money are going to spend all their money and they're going to pay for it all. But it's still not, to me, their buying dollar goes down. So I think there's a better way. The last bill is something that I want to talk more about, what we see today. But this one I'm having a hard time with. Thank you.
All right, we'll move over to Co-Chair Igo next.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Chair Howard, I'm going to start with this. I wish we could amend our rules for this committee because the quadratic equation should not be involved as a word that's allowed in this committee. And if I ever have the ability to chair a committee again, it's going in my rules. Calc 2 was a class I did not make it through in college. So moving on from that, I just want to start, because I was curious, we're talking about taxes a lot, so I looked up Merriam-Webster with the definition of taxes. There's two definitions. The first, a charge usually of money imposed by authority on persons or property for public purposes. The second definition, a heavy demand. And I think you heard from my side today the heavy demand that taxes are. So I did my research and I looked into what this increase would do and what it would put for, we talked about state competitiveness. This would have Minnesota's sales tax be at 7.25%, which would tie us for the highest sales tax in the country with California. At a time where, again, costs are going up, we can't be entertaining ideas like this right now. And again, you have my commitment, I've said it before in this committee, that we need to do things to tackle the rising cost of housing and make sure we return affordability. And my side has done a great job today about talking about how there's many other ways for us to do that. But a constitutional amendment that would make us tied for the highest tax sales tax in the country, along with growth in government through different councils and organizations with oversight, it is not something we should be entertaining at a time where the state's got a lot of internal work to do. You know, if we want to talk about spending money, making sure it gets in the right places, we had $9 billion in fraud disappear. That could have been money that could have been appropriated to work on housing, or could have been put to use in other places to make sure to lower costs for Minnesotans. Instead, it disappeared. So at a time where we've got a fraud problem and an affordability problem, raising that demand on people is not something we can be doing. And for that reason, we cannot support the bill. But looking forward to continue working together in other ways to lower that cost, to make sure that we have a diverse housing environment that brings about affordability and stability for every single Minnesotan.
Thank you, Chair Igo. And before I get into my comments, I just wanted to raise for the members on this committee, as well as for the public, that it was brought to my attention that I was referred to as Madam Chair, of which I am not a madam. Yeah, I thank you, but just a reminder that I am trans, non-binary, and very proud of that. I am very proud of the work that you were doing on this, Chair Howard, and the Minnesotans bringing forward a beautiful painting of a picture of a future that we could have. The way I look at this bill is that it's a painting that we're putting out to designed by Minnesotans and put out to the voters of Minnesota to decide yes or no. And so that's the great thing about this constitutional amendment. Anybody who has worked on one knows the investment and work that it goes into getting that over the finish line and on the ballot box. As it was brought up here about the state budget being at 0.3% and that this 0.375% at a time when we're coming off of the historic funding that everybody knows was almost entirely one time. This means good paying union jobs. We've heard 25,000 new starter homes. That could mean more generational wealth and tax growth, 4,400 new supportive housing units, 8,300 new housing vouchers. And I'll say that this is really in looking at a shared responsibility for housing for all of our neighbors to be able to have a place to call home. In the richest state, in the richest country of the world, we have some of the most massive wealth inequalities. And low wages is a big driver of our homelessness crisis and driving up our housing supply demand. And I'll say that in a time where we are, I would also call it the land of 10,000 corporate tax breaks. If you look at the 400 pages of the tax expenditure book, you can see them in there. And so I would like to also have us continue to making sure that we're having the wealthiest who are making those dollars off of workers and neighbors and communities across Minnesota. It was said by one of our testifiers that we don't abandon our neighbors. And this will make sure that we do that for today and tomorrow. So Chair Howard, we'll go over to you for any final comments.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski, and thank you, members, for the debate. What I would say is, you know, it was probably a typical debate on an issue like this from policymakers, Democrats and Republicans, having a discussion. I guess what I want to close is a bill like this lets us have this debate and this conversation with the people of Minnesota. And I think it's high time that we have more of a direct conversation with the people of Minnesota about how we ultimately solve for what I think we all have shared we must, which is to make Minnesota a place where people can afford their home. This is a proposal. You cannot solve our big challenges without big ideas.
And this is a big idea that warrants that conversation with the people of Minnesota so that we can put our state on the course to be a state where everyone can afford a place called home. And so I know we're not taking a vote on this today, but I really look forward to the conversations, not just in these walls, but with Minnesotans all across the state about how do we build the future that we all want to see in the state of Minnesota. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Howard. And with that, I lay the bill over.
Vice Chair Kozlowski, we have to switch seats here. As Representative Kozlowski gets set, the bill up before us is going to be House File 1879. Vice Chair Kozlowski, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, Chair Howard, I would like to move the bill.
All right, House File 1879 is before us. Please describe your bill.
All right, thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. I am back before you with House File 1879 because housing counseling is not an add-on to home ownership. It is really the infrastructure that makes it possible. The HECAT, the Home Ownership Education Counseling Training Fund, supports a statewide network of over 30 organizations reaching Minnesotans in every corner of our state across all of our districts. And this is a bill that I've been proud to carry previously and that the state has funded over and time again. So HECAT is the primary source of funding that reaches nearly 9,000 households from Dakota and Scott County in the metro to One Roof and White Earth investment initiatives in greater Minnesota. They provide one-on-one finance coaching, homebuyer education, and really importantly, foreclosure prevention support. And this work is really deep, so some families are ready after a class. Others work with counselors for up to 3 years, building credit, stabilizing budgets, and preparing for a mortgage. And this is what it actually takes to create and sustain and build and make sure that first-gen homeowners are ready to step into their first home. These are trusted community-based and multilingual services, which are really important that they're neutral, that they're centered on long-term stability rather than commissions, and that they're designed to meet people where they're at. So we're also facing a moment of urgency. As you may have seen the news, that foreclosure risks are continuing to rise in Minnesota, and I'm really proud to say that the HECAT team across the state has had a 95% success rate in averting foreclosure. So House File 1879 is really a low-cost, high-impact investment in stabilizing the system so that folks can be ready to get into home ownership and ensure we don't lose counselors, the capacity, or the progress that we've built. And with that, I would just like to turn it over to my testifiers to share more about the impact and what this program looks like.
First up, we have Mikeeta Davis, Home Ownership Advisor for Three Rivers Community Action. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Mikeeta Davis. I'm a homeownership advisor with Three Rivers in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here in strong support of HECAF funding because I work directly with individuals and families who are doing everything right. They're working, they're saving, and hoping for the American dream, and yet cannot access homeownership without support. Every day, I meet with first-time, first-generation homebuyers navigating a system they were just never taught. Many are financially ready, but lack the down payment resources and guidance needed to move forward. HECAP funding helps bridge the gap by supporting programs like ours that provide homebuyer education, one-to-one pre-purchase counseling, and direct pathways to successful and sustainable homeownership. I work with a participant named Jacqueline who first connected with us in 2019. But she returned late 2024 determined to become a homeowner. She completed our home stretch class and stayed engaged through one-to-one pre-purchase counseling, where we built the relationship that helped her stay focused and confident throughout the process. She became mortgage ready, she was pre-approved, and then when MMCDC first generation down payment assistance stalled, she began to lose hope. So during that same uncertain time, she ended her lease, moved into a hotel with her three children, and stayed there for a month. So she wanted to give up. Through continued one-on-one counseling, along with support from her homeownership mentor, we helped encourage her, we problem-solved with her, and we kept her moving forward. In June of 2025, she closed on her home. So her story just reflects the importance of the services that are services that are accessible, culturally responsive, and tailored to the individuals we serve. The trust built through one-to-one pre-purchase counseling allows participants to stay engaged and continue moving forward, even during the most challenging moments. So without funding like HECAP, many families will remain locked out of homeownership, not because they aren't ready, but because they don't have the access and the right support at the right time. So when we invest in HECAT, we strengthen families, we stabilize our communities, we create long-term economic impact that lasts for generations. And so thank you for your opportunity to testify here today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Next, we have Kristen Birch, Executive Director, PRG Incorporated.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kristen Birch, and I serve as Executive Director of PRG Inc., a HUD-certified housing counseling agency serving the seven-county Twin Cities Metro. We are one of the largest providers of homeownership services in the state. I also serve as vice chair of the Minnesota Homeownership Center Board of Directors, which supports a statewide network of housing counseling organizations. Through my role, I see both the day-to-day realities households are navigating and the broader system that supports homeownership across Minnesota. I'm here today in support of increased funding for the Homeownership Education Counseling and Training Fund, HECAT. At its core, housing counseling is about helping people make smart, informed decisions at one of the most financially significant moments. The state invests significantly in down payment assistance and affordable homeownership development. Our role is to make sure those investments translate into successful, sustainable outcomes for the households they are intended to serve. Access alone is not enough. Outcomes depend on informed decision making. Just as important as getting people into homes is making sure they can stay in them. Housing counseling provides a critical function when a homeowner begins to experience distress. Our goal is to reach people as early as possible, but in reality, we are often meeting people at different points along that spectrum. For many homeowners, we are not only one of the first places they turn, but we are often the only place where they feel safe enough to say out loud that they are at risk of losing their home. We routinely hear from our clients that no one else in their life knows they're at risk of foreclosure. From there, we help homeowners understand their situation, engage with their servicer, and navigate options that can prevent foreclosure. We track pre-foreclosure notices because they give us a real-time window into what's happening for homeowners. In recent years, those numbers have begun to rise again, and in 2025, Minnesota saw over 18,600 notices. That tells us more households are entering a period of vulnerability, and what happens next depends on whether they are connected to trusted, timely support. We recently worked with a homeowner who fell behind on her mortgage after a job loss in December. She had been placed on a short-term forbearance, but wasn't sure what would happen next or how she would sustain her payments. During that time, she was able to regain employment, and through counseling, we helped her adjust her budget so that she could keep up with her monthly expenses and prepare for a loan modification that would allow her to remain in her home. We are not in a foreclosure crisis today, and we don't have to be. The kind of support I just described is what prevents a temporary hardship from turning into a foreclosure. We have a system designed to do exactly that. We just need the capacity to meet the need. Housing counseling has always been supported by a combination of funding sources, and today those sources are under pressure. We are being relied on more, both because more households are pursuing homeownership with increased access to down payment assistance, and because rising costs like property taxes and insurance are creating additional strain. As a result, we are serving more households and navigating more complex situations without a corresponding increase in capacity. Minnesota has built a strong and effective homeownership counseling network. This is a moment to preserve its integrity and the impact it delivers. This work reaches thousands of households across the state, each representing entire families, and provides meaningful support for accessing homeownership and staying stable in the homes when it matters most. HECAT is a relatively modest per household investment that delivers strong outcomes and helps prevent avoidable foreclosure, housing instability, and increased pressure on an already strained market. Increasing HECAT funding ensures that this system can continue to support informed homeownership decisions, respond to growing demand, and keep more Minnesotans stable in the homes that they already have. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. And next, we have a virtual testifier, Denise Butler, Associate Director of ACER.
Good afternoon, Chair and member of the committees. My name is Denise Butler. I'm representing ACER. ACER is African Career Education and Resource, Inc. We work across Minnesota to support economic development, housing stability, and wealth building within African and immigrant communities. We strongly support HF 1879 and the investment in homeownership education, counseling, and training. This funding is critical to expanding access and preparing first-time homebuyers for successful long-term ownership. We've worked hand-in-hand with members of the underserved communities to help them avoid foreclosure, supporting them in navigating housing courts and mediating with HOAs. We understand firsthand the financial and emotional impact this part of the system can have on families and communities. As a homeowner myself, living in an HOA community, I too face foreclosure, not due to my inability to pay my mortgage or dues, but solely due to board biases, retaliation, and just the fact that board members and property managers do not have the full education and regulations in place. Through our work, we see a consistent gap. Many buyers are told to review documents, but are not equipped to understand what those documents actually mean, especially when purchasing into a homeowners association or HOA. This includes understanding bylaws, fee structures, special assessments, and enforcement policies. Without this knowledge, buyers can unknowingly enter into agreements that put them at significant financial risk. We urge the committee to ensure that homeownership education funded through this bill includes practical, standardized training on HOA homeownership, along with culturally responsive and accessible delivery. ACER is also well-positioned and interested in supporting the development and delivery of this training. This investment is not just about access to homeownership. It is about ensuring informed, sustainable ownership for Minnesota families. Thank you for your leadership and consideration.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the public that would like to testify? If not, we can go to member discussion. Not seeing any members, I'll just thank Representative Meckland.
I think this was the last testifier here, Denise Butler. Based on what she said about HOAs, I hope we can have all your support for all members with the HOA bill, which is coming to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dotson.
Account that why we are pulling it from the general fund, not pulling it from the existing account that MHFA has extra money for.
Vice Chair Kozlowski, I don't know if you have a specified fund you're talking about, Representative Dotseth, or. But you know, I'll go to Representative Kozlowski if she has a response or an answer. Representative Kozlowski?
Chair Howard and Vice Chair Dotseth, that's a good question. In terms of pulling the funding over to the Housing Development Fund. I'm not certain why that mechanism was determined, but we can definitely follow up and get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Unless somebody from the
TCAT crew would know that.
Yeah, okay. We'll definitely follow up and get back to you.
Thank you.
Coach Arrigo.
Thank you, Coach Chair Howard, Representative Kozlowski. Very familiar with this program in front of us. The one question I want to ask, and it's probably going to be a follow-up question, so don't worry about answering now, but just how many people this has helped, like the metric data, I think would be super, super helpful to have when we talk about, because there's a lot of good merits to this program. And I think if we could show, you know, how many people this has helped attain home ownership and how many people it's helping to attain home ownership, helps us as a committee, but also as a legislature, talk about funding opportunities for here in the future. So. Like I said, I don't need a response right now, but it would be a great follow-up for this committee to have.
Representative Kozlowski?
Chair Howard and Co-Chair Igo, I appreciate that question. I think, you know, it's spelled out in the 9,000 households that we said statewide, but if it's not in the packets, we'll make sure that we can send it out. I know that the Home Ownership Center sent out their one-pager on both the home buyer counseling coaching as well as the foreclosure prevention. And that does have data broken down actually by region and every county. You can see pre-purchase to post-purchase numbers. And across homes that they were able to help, we can see that most of them are first-time home buyers, 64% are communities of color, 83% are at or below 80% AMI. So really good data in here that spells that out, translates to broken down by region as well.
Representative Kozlowski, thanks for bringing the bill forward. I think it's really important. Any final words?
Sure. Chair Howard and members, I'll just say housing counseling is a really critical component to making sure that we are opening stable pathways and providing supports all along the lifespan of home ownership. Everybody knows that it's the one of the most exciting and rewarding times, but it can also be really scary. And so having folks like these here across the state providing that support really is priceless. So thank you.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over. Next up is House File 1417, Representative Norris. Representative Norris, would you like to move your bill in front of committee?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Howard. I move that House File 1417 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Housing Omnibus Bill.
So moved. And I understand you have the A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe it?
Yes, Chair Howard. The A1 amendment just cleans up the appropriation language. The bill was introduced last year, and so it contemplated appropriations in both the 26 and 27 fiscal year. Now this amendment would just do the 27 fiscal year.
Any discussion? Hearing not, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended.
Thank you. Chair Howard, members of the committee, we're here today to talk about the Manufactured Home Community Redevelopment Program. As we've talked about a lot in this committee before, manufactured housing is the largest source of unsubsidized affordable housing that we have here in Minnesota. It serves approximately 40,000 homes in all 87 counties, and primarily those are low-income and moderate-income Minnesotans, many on fixed incomes, seniors, those living with disabilities. One of the challenges that manufactured home park communities face is that many of the communities were built in the 1960s and the 1970s, and the infrastructure is starting to show its age. These issues directly impact the health, the safety, and the stability of this housing. This particular program that the bill would fund was established by the legislature in 2019, and funding began in 2020. It was designed so that all community types can access the funding, whether you're a resident-owned cooperative, whether you're a privately owned park, a nonprofit, and it provides grants for critical infrastructure improvements. The current base funding for this program is only $1 million per year, but the program is oversubscribed on almost a 2-to-1 basis. And in 2024, only 21% of eligible projects were funded. So this bill aims to reverse that by appropriating $15 million in additional ongoing base funding and scales a program that is already working but underfunded. And I'll just highlight, this is a really effective and cost-efficient use of our housing dollars. Preservation only costs about $8,000 to $25,000 per home. You compare that to the cost of building a new home, and it's significantly cheaper. And this also is something that can be funded through housing infrastructure bonds. So as we're looking at how we might be able to fund some investments in programs like these as we get toward the end of the session, I encourage you to take a look at that as a committee. And then lastly, committee members have felt the impact of this program in their districts. I'm told that Representatives Johnson, Igo, and Howard all have communities that have successfully used funding from this program. And so with that, Chair Howard, I've got a couple of testifiers to speak more about the benefits of this particular program.
Thank you. First up, we have virtually Bev Adrian, president of Woodlawn Terrace Cooperative.
Hi, I'm Bev Adrian. I'm president of the board of directors of Woodlawn Terrace Cooperative in Richfield, Minnesota. We were fortunately recipients of grants to improve our infrastructure. Our park was about, dates back to the 1930s. So it's really old, maybe one of the oldest parks in the state. We converted to a co-op about 4.5 years ago, and we fortunately were able to connect to city water. I have an example of the well water that we previously had, which was the number one complaint in the community. This is our well water. We now have beautiful, clean Richfield water. Unfortunately, the grant that we received wasn't enough to cover the cost for our sewer line relining. Our pipes are very old, probably 50 years old, and we have consistent problems with breakage and roots, and it's an ongoing issue. We had hoped to cover the sewer project with the grant, but when we applied in 2023 and started the work in 2024, everything had gone up in price, you know, like everything else. But we were very appreciative of that grant. It also assisted the co-op to add 15 new homes in the 4 years that we've been in existence. And we are the most affordable housing there is in the country. We've added eight two-bedroom units, and we've also added seven multiple bedroom units, which provide housing for families. It's very exciting. We are so appreciative. We are grateful. We've paved our roads. We look wonderful. And I cordially invite all of you anytime to come visit us in Richfield and see what a fabulous opportunity and what a nice community we are building here. We're safe and it's secure housing, and it's an opportunity that is just unmatched. And I thank you. Thank you so much graciously for the opportunity to receive those grants.
I have to take a bit of personal privilege and thank that wonderful pitch for Richfield from our testifier. True story, Richfield gets its name from its rich fields or its wonderful soil, which is why it's commonly known that we have the best drinking water in the state of Minnesota. Yeah. All right. Our next testifier, Sam Estes, Affordable Housing Program Manager for CoNorth.
Chair and members, my name is Samuel Estes. I serve as Affordable Housing Program Manager at CoNorth. I'm here to support House File 1417, which would increase funding for MHCR, the Manufactured Home Community Redevelopment Grant Program. As already mentioned, many manufactured home parks are responsible for their own infrastructure, and a lot of these systems are decades old and wearing out. This creates real health and safety risks for residents. At the same time, park owners often don't have enough resources to make the needed upgrades. This puts communities in a tough spot. They can delay critical repairs, or they can make improvements and raise the rents to cover the costs. Neither option is great for residents. The MHCR program offers a better path. It helps fund these upgrades without passing on the costs to residents. And the program is working. In its first 5 years, MHCR awarded over $20 million to cooperatives in our network. That funding has supported improvements in 11 communities and helped preserve more than 800 affordable homes at an average cost of $25,000 per lot. In my role, I've helped manage these projects. I've worked with 10 cooperatives on more than 35 major infrastructure projects. These include sewer, water, roads, and electrical upgrades, as well as drainage and storm shelter improvements. 30 of these projects are already complete or wrapping up, and the rest are underway. And you heard from Bev Adrian what a difference these projects have made in her community. Unfortunately, demand is higher than the available funding. In the first 5 years, about $43 million was awarded, while nearly $85 million was requested. That leaves around $40 million in critical projects still unfunded. Across our network, we've identified about $5 million in additional urgent upgrades, mostly in newer cooperatives that haven't yet received MHCR funding. There was no RFP in 2025 due to lack of funding. Increasing the base appropriation to $15 million per year would allow more communities to make essential improvements. This would help preserve affordable housing and improve the quality of life for manufactured home park residents across the state. I urge you to support the bill. Thank you for your time.
Anyone from the public that would like to testify? If not, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Representative Norris for bringing this forward. I can get behind this bill. And the reason is because we're talking about a lot of challenges, and we've talked about private equity coming in and buying up stuff. And I've learned a lot about this, and being able to, it's an infrastructure. It's basically for infrastructure, as you mentioned, from 60s and 70s, falling apart. We need to start dealing with that. But it gives another tool for mom and pops to be able to stay and own the parks and deal with the rent, you know, and keep the rent and working and being part of a family there, by allowing them a tool to figure out how they can deal with the infrastructure, because there's a lot of challenges. Your infrastructure is falling apart. How are you going to spend that money and be able to, you know, not raise the rent huge, and be able to own it? And that gives them more incentive and more reasons that they have to have somebody come in and say, well, we'll take those problems away from you. And it just creates more problems. So thank you for bringing this forward. I think this makes sense. I think it's something that is used for, you know, good purposes and what it's there for. So thank you.
Any other members? If not, I'll give you the final word, Representative Norris.
All right. Well, thanks to the testifiers. Thanks for those positive comments, Representative Johnson. And my hope is that we can come together as a committee, and whether it's through HIBs or other sources, find a way to direct some funding to this really critical program to help out our neighbors in manufactured housing all throughout the state.
Thank you. And you can stay up there, Representative Norris. You have the next bill as well, which is House Bill 2462. Would you like to move this bill before the committee?
I would, Chair Howard. I move House File 2462 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Please describe your bill.
All right. So House File 2462 has to do with workforce housing in Greater Minnesota. The Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Development Program is available exclusively to smaller and mid-sized communities in Greater Minnesota, with funding priority given to communities with 30,000 or fewer residents. The program also prioritizes smaller developments and often serves communities that don't typically receive funding from other new construction programs. Funds can be used for qualified expenditures that result in the direct development of rental properties, including the acquisition of a property, construction or improvements, or provision of loans, grants, interest rate subsidies, public infrastructure, and other related financing costs. So it's really flexible to make the math pencil out on a particular workforce housing project. Funding is available to build market-rate residential rental properties in communities with job growth and demand for workforce rental housing. Communities are also required to match the funds, $1 from the local community for every $2 in funding offered through the program. And I have to say, you know, I've had the opportunity the last year to travel around the state a fair amount and talk to leaders across the state, and the need for workforce housing is something that is a constant no matter which community I go to visit. I know we're going to be hearing from Mr. Tomasoni here shortly. Had a chance a couple months ago to go up to Duluth and talk to business leaders up there, and so many of the businesses up there want to hire, are trying to hire, and the biggest constraint is the lack of housing for the workers that they want to bring in. I also know I've talked to young people. Young people have filed some letters of support today with the bills, and they've identified affordable housing as a critical need in our state. And so, you know, no matter where you go within our state, no matter your age, this is something that is a top priority, a critical need, and I think this Greater Minnesota Housing Workforce Housing Bill is one of the ways that we can address that problem.
First testifier is Elizabeth Weffel, staff lobbyist with Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Co-Chair Howard, Co-Chair Igo, and members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Weffel, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities to share our support, our strong support, for HF 2462. Communities throughout Greater Minnesota have consistently identified that housing is critical to their community's success. It provides a foundation for stability, well-being, and opportunity for Minnesotans, impacting everything from health and education to economic mobility. A secure, affordable home allows individuals and families to thrive, access better jobs, and contribute positively to their communities, and helps communities attract and retain key businesses. In Greater Minnesota, however, one of the biggest challenges is that the cost to construct a unit of housing is more expensive than our communities can support in rent or mortgages. And this program helps to close that gap. These resources are crucial to closing the housing gap in Greater Minnesota. Our communities are working diligently to support and attract the development of additional housing, and this bill will help further that work. We would welcome the chance to work with you to continue to address housing challenges in Greater Minnesota, and thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on this bill. We also want to thank Representative Norris, who doesn't represent Greater Minnesota, but also recognizes our needs. So we appreciate you carrying this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, virtually, we have Skip Duchino, president of D.W. Jones.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. As I just mentioned, I'm Skip Duchino. I'm the president of D.W. Jones, Inc. I reside in Walker. We are a housing developer and property manager working throughout Greater Minnesota with a primary focus on affordable and market rate workforce housing. I'm here today to support House File 2462. Our company has extensive experience with the Workforce Housing Development Program. To date, we have received funding for 8 properties, which will provide 345 units of housing across 7 different communities in Greater Minnesota. So why should you support continued funding for this program? To me, it's pretty simple. First, the program delivers funding to projects faster than other programs available through Minnesota Housing. Second, the cost per unit is lower than traditional affordable housing projects. Third, these properties pay real estate taxes, providing ongoing support to local communities where they are built. For example, we constructed a project in War Road, Minnesota called Icon Apartments. It's a 65-unit development. Our 2026 property taxes are over $121,000. Those dollars are going back into the community every year, and they represent housing for teachers, healthcare workers, and manufacturing employees within the community. And just as importantly, these developments support local employers by ensuring there is housing available for their workforce. We have partnered with employers like Marvin Windows, Polaris Industries, DigiKey, Long Prairie Packing, just to name a few. The reality is, Greater Minnesota, we have a strong workforce and growing employers, but these areas simply cannot support the same rental rates as the metro. That creates a gap that makes these projects very difficult to build. This program is one of the only tools specifically designed to help fill that gap and make workforce housing feasible in rural communities. And funding for this program is running out. In 2024, there was $39 million available, thank you to the legislature. Minnesota Housing received 48 applications for those funds, totaling nearly $96 million in requests, but only 27 projects were funded. There was not a funding round in 2025, but currently there's a funding round open in 2026, but there's only $4 million available. You can understand $4 million spread around Greater Minnesota to fund market rate housing is not going to go very far. Without additional funding, this program effectively goes away after this year. We are asking for your support of House File 2462 to provide $20 million so we can continue delivering housing in Greater Minnesota. This program works. It supports communities, employers, and the people who want to live and work in Greater Minnesota. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Next, another virtual testifier, Dante Tomasoni, Director of Corporate Affairs of Cirrus Aircraft.
Good afternoon, committee. Chair Zygo and Howard, thank you for having me today. I am Dante Tomasoni, the Director of Corporate Affairs for Cirrus Aircraft. I rise in support of the bill today to talk a little bit about what Cirrus does, the challenges we have in housing, and then some of my unique experience that I've lent to the testimony in prior legislative sessions. So first and foremost, as Cirrus Aircraft, we have 1,750 employees in this region that has grown from 500 a little over a decade ago. So you can imagine our growth has been significant and it's been fast. One of our biggest challenges to hiring any outside talent is finding housing. In fact, a statistic we often talk about is we've had over 35 employees in the last 3 to 5 years. I shouldn't say employees, 35 potential hires that have either rejected an offer or taken an offer and then later had to rescind their acceptance simply due to housing shortages. We employ at a manufacturing level, we employ at an engineering level, we employ all the way up to our C-suite here in Duluth. And at every level of housing, we have challenges in this area. It is very expensive to build here. It is very difficult and housing is constrained. With that given as serious, housing being something that is constraining our growth, not only at the manufacturing level and every level of our company, I have a little bit of unique experience set. Prior to being at Sirius, I was actually a multifamily developer for a few years, and I actually have an MBA in economics. And so it was a great perspective in my career, especially in the housing. And it's something I still continue to work on to help Sirius with our challenges. And what we faced coming out of that, you know, the word pandemic is getting a little old, but it still has impacts, especially on the housing community. The reality of building any kind of housing, whether it's multifamily, whether it's single family, whether it's workforce, whether it's luxury, it doesn't matter at what level, you still have basic economic principles that supply and demand are things that drive up prices. And right now we don't have supply. The other piece of that is every piece of building material that happens in these projects, the prices have doubled, they've tripled, they've made it too expensive to build. And so, at a community level, sometimes you see skepticism, especially in greater Minnesota, as a developer comes to a community and wants to be a part and build something that the developer is somehow pulling the wool over the eyes of a community or whatever it is. But the reality is it's all math. It all comes down to a simple mathematical equation: is how much is it going to cost to build it? And can someone drive enough profit to justify dedicating resources and time and their career into building housing? And we have a gap in this state. It is very difficult. The bill is 20 million is a great thing. The state needs more help. There was some spirited debate earlier on the first bill today. Whatever that vehicle is to help developers clear that gap, I definitely leave up to the legislature. But everything that we could get into not only workforce housing, but every level of housing simply to increase the supply is really, really needed in this state. And then my last unique piece of experience is growing up on the range, which I'm very proud of, and it has given me a unique perspective. There was a time when building in greater Minnesota had its advantages in it cost-wise, right? You could get a little bit labor cheaper because the cost of labor was, or the cost of living was lower for not only developers, the builders, and anyone that lived in that area. You get materials cheaper, et cetera. That's not the case anymore. A piece of lumber costs the same on the Iron Range or in greater Minnesota as it does anywhere else. And then the lack, sort of the driving down of the population makes someone who can actually build a unit of housing even more valuable and even more rare. So now their rates are at a premium as well. So the material cost, there's no advantage in greater Minnesota as there used to be. You could say, like, you could build this house for $200,000. If you built it in the Twin Cities, it would be $600,000 because of whatever reason that is. That's not the case anymore. And so greater Minnesota especially needs all the help it can get, because as we're seeing economic challenges in the area, it's even more difficult when housing is one of them, when you can't house new employees that you want to recruit. And we're seeing that all across the board. We're seeing economic challenges. We're seeing cost issues. We've seen record inflation. There's a lot going on geopolitically that is still impacting that and making it very, very difficult. So whatever the state can do to help the finances and the math of simply the math of building a house, whether at any level, especially at the workforce level, we support not only at Sirius, but hopefully provide a little testimony and experience today to help the committee consider these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the last testifier we have signed up. Is there anybody in the public that would like to testify? If not, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Scraba.
Thanks, Chair Howard. I have a question for Skip Duchesne. Can you get him up?
Yes.
I think he's okay. He's available. Yeah. So
can you hear me, Skip?
Yes, I can.
Okay. How much gap funding would you need to construct 200 units?
Mr. Duchesne?
That's a good question. That ICON project that I brought up, we had $500,000 worth of gap funding through the Workforce Housing Development Program that allowed us to put it together. I also had an employer, Marvin Windows, who came to the table with basically a zero deferred loan of $900,000. So it was really about $1.4 million was our gap on a $9.2 million project. Each one is a little different, but specifically that project, that's how that came together.
How many units was it?
That was 65 units.
6-5?
6-5, correct.
Okay.
Representative Graba?
Chair, I'm with Mr. Tomasoni and Skip. They both are Greater Minnesota stewards. They want to help Greater Minnesota, and I'm interested in helping because I've been to a lot of these meetings on the range and different, you know, where the developer says, well, if I had a little more, I could do a little more. If I had a little more, if I had a million more, I could do more. And you know, we have an opportunity maybe to do that. And the big question always comes is where's it going to come from? But I think there are businesses on the range that are willing to help with housing if we could help with housing. So I think there's a time where we can start having a conversation, and this might be where I can start getting involved. So I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Graba. I would just say it underscores that we need public investment to make these deals work. And, you know, we can have the conversation about where that comes from. But at the scale we need a lot of public investment to build the kind of housing, but especially in Greater Minnesota. So, Coach Rago.
Thank you for the bill. Again, this is a big concern when you talk about wanting to fill those gaps and everything. And I appreciate you sent a fellow ranger to testify for sending the money north. So you knew how to win over the chair. So I'm looking forward to the conversation, seeing what we can do this session around this type of issue. Thank you.
Representative Norris, any final word?
Wait. Chair Howard, Chair Igo, between the Richfield resident and the ranger, we got all the bases covered today. So thanks to the advocates who helped make that happen. But yeah, I think, you know, this is just the whole hearing today has been about, you know, the emphasis on the need for how do we close that gap? How do we make it possible to build the sort of affordable housing that we need at all levels of the spectrum in our housing? And I think this program has proven to be effective, and I'd encourage us to look at ways we can try to direct more dollars toward it so we can continue to help our communities in Greater Minnesota thrive as well. Because when every community in Minnesota does better, it benefits our entire state.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over. That's the final bill on our agenda. So we are adjourned.